and I sat down to plan out what we were thinking that God wanted to remind us of this morning, or sat there, we thought, well, Thanksgiving might be some good place to start. And you'd probably be shocked by that. But as we thought about honing it in a little bit more, the idea of contentment kind of came up in Philippians 4:11, which you can throw up that slide. So Philippians 4:11 really captured us, this idea of Paul saying he's learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. As the four of us sat around and thought about what Paul meant and what we are supposed to glean from this, we spent about an hour, and we were really amazed at how hard it was to nail this idea down. What does it really mean? And throughout the week, as Dave and I tried to coordinate what we were thinking about and planning for this morning, we were surprised again that it was really difficult to figure out how to define it and how to do it. How do you be content? And I have to tell you, I'm grateful for this process. And I'm excited to share with you where God led me as I thought this through. Any ideas where he might have led me? A beach in Hawaii or something? It's kind of where I think I'd be content. He actually led me to a book that's only 12 chapters long. And as you read it, you almost get the feeling of hopelessness. Any ideas of which that book, which, what'd you say? I heard something. Yeah, Ecclesiastes. Crazy, hey? It's a fascinating book because in it, the teacher, Solomon, or a Solomon-like person, wrestles with the deeper questions of meaning and purpose. And as I read through it, I realized at least part of what he's searching for is contentment. Because if you don't have much meaning in your life, or you don't feel like there's a purpose, it's hard to be content. Now, you don't read through it and think, wow, this guy's really learned the key to contentment, because he keeps on using this word, meaningless, and he starts, you know, in verse 2, when he starts speaking, it's meaningless, meaningless, everything's meaningless, and then it's repeated a number of times throughout the book. And in a way, meaningless is an okay translation of the Hebrew word, but the Hebrew word is actually this word, hevel, and what hevel literally means is vapor or smoke. So what happens when you try to grab or predict what smoke's going to do? Like you try to grab it or predict it? I mean, you know how it is. You're come up to a bonfire and people are sitting around it and you sit down and what happens? Smoke's in your face. So you stand up and you go to sit on the other side and what happens? Smoke's in your face, right? No matter where you go, smoke's in your face. And you're like, I can't predict what's going on with this, and I can't push it away. You grab it, it's gone. You try to predict it, it's gone. You don't know what's going to happen. And it's transitory, and it's kind of like an enigma. So you read through Ecclesiastes, and you're like, this guy, he tries to find purpose and meaning in pleasure. And he does everything under the sun to pursue pleasure. And at the end, he's like, it's hevel. It's transitory, it's meaningless, or not meaningless, but an enigma, kind of. And then he pursues purpose and meaning in status and in career and in wisdom. He tries to pursue it in all these different ways. And at the end, he's like, it's all hevel. It's all paradoxical. But one thing that keeps coming up again and again, and I want you to see it, so I'm going to throw a number of passages on the screen. And it's this repetition. So if you can throw the next slide up. In 2:24 to 25, he says, a person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too, I see, is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? And then in 3:12 through 14, he says, I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and taken away from it, but God does it so that people will fear him. And then you go down to 3:22, and it says, "So I saw that there is nothing better for a person than to enjoy their work, because that is their lot. For who can bring them to see what will happen after them?" And then you go down to 5:18-19, and it says, "This is what I have observed to be good, that it is appropriate for a person to eat, to drink, and to find satisfaction in their toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given them, for this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift of God." Skip down again, 8:15. "So I commend the enjoyment of life, because there's nothing better for a person under the sun to eat and drink and be glad. Then joy will accompany them in their toil all the days of the life God has given them under the sun." And then 9:7-9 says, "Go eat your food with gladness. Drink your wine with a joyful heart, for God has already approved what you do. Always be clothed in white and always anoint your head with oil. Enjoy life with your wife whom you love. All the days of this meaningless or hevel life that God has given you under the sun, all your hevel days, for this is your lot in life and in your toilsome labor under the sun." So again and again, the teacher keeps coming back to enjoying food and drink and the labor that he's given us. And hidden away in here is a little secret. As the teacher goes off searching for meaning and purpose in these things that he pursues, he's actually trying to control his circumstances. He's trying to control his life, and he's trying to find things by doing. And he's trying to create life that's meaningful and purposeful and content. And instead, he finds it temporary and confusing. But check out verse 14 of chapter 3, if you can go back to that slide, 3:14. There's something that isn't hevel, that isn't transitory or an enigma, and that is God. Whatever he does is enduring. Whatever the teacher does is transitory. Whatever God does is enduring. And then the last verse of the book says this, if you can skip down to the last slide there. The next one, yeah. "Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil." So in his search for meaning, the teacher tried to control his circumstances in order to find purpose, meaning, contentment. And he pursued it through pleasure and through wealth and through status and through career and all these things. And when he tried to do all that, he was as discontent as ever. But when he gave up control to God, when he released the outcome of his pursuits and trusted God that whatever he brings is what he wants, and then he enjoyed those simple things, food and drink and his work, it was then when joy and contentment came. And I've experienced this personally. I'll give you one example. Years ago, before we went on mission trips with One Wife, One Chance, which many of you have been a part of, been down there, this is a mission organization that takes teams down to Mexico to this one community and tries to support this community. We build houses, we do other things in the community. And so we've been doing that for a number of years. But before that, I was preparing a team of youth to go down to visit one of our missionaries in Brazil. And we prepared for months. We tried to do everything right. We filled out our visa forms. And at the end, our visas were denied. And I was feeling a lot like the teacher. It's all hevel. But then an amazing opportunity opened up for us to go even further across the globe to Sri Lanka. And there was somebody in our congregation that was doing some work there. And I thought, wow, this is the opportunity of a lifetime. Like, what teenager gets to go across the globe to do mission work in a country, Sri Lanka, like way over there? And so I thought, this is the opportunity of a lifetime, not only for me, but for these teens and everybody. So I was determined to make sure this was the best trip ever. I tried to control where we went, what we did, when we did it. And I didn't realize at the time how much I was trying to manipulate this trip to be the best and how I was trying to control it. But the point is, I was so obsessed with making sure that it was perfect that I missed it. I missed the joy, the contentment that was available that in what God was doing and what he would have done if I just stepped back. So it was a really good learning opportunity for me for the next mission trips I went on. But here's what the teacher is saying in regards to contentment. If we're intent on controlling our life, making sure we manipulate the circumstances and the people and whatever is around us, then contentment will elude us. But if we're willing to give up control and accept God's outcomes, whatever they are, if they're training us for better or if they are simple things like food and drink, and we enjoy those things, that's when contentment comes. So ponder the teacher's lessons this morning and throughout this weekend. As you celebrate Thanksgiving in whatever way you do, with family, friends, on your own, however you do it, and remember that it's not doing anything that he's saying we find contentment, but it's in trusting that the one who loves us, who created us, who gave himself for us, is the one that guides these things and wants us to have the fullest, most joyful, most content life possible as we trust in him. Let's just pray. Father, thank you so much that you're in control and I'm not. Whenever I try to take control, it doesn't work out very well. But when I give up to you, it does, and I am continually fighting with that to give it up. Help each of us to find more and more contentment as we give up more and more to you. Amen.